This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
And this is Bob Fitrakis. A lot of things have happened since our last show. We've got a new copy of the Free Press Express, our broadsheet, and the headline says Fractured State of the State. That's right. Governor John Kasich went to Steubenville, and it wasn't to visit Dean Martin's museum or whatever is there, the home of the great and legendary crooner. And as he sang, everybody loves somebody sometime, but there wasn't much love in Steubenville.
Well, I heard that Kasich went to Steubenville because he didn't want to give the state of the state in Columbus, where Occupy Columbus was camping outside of the state house.
And kept yelling, "Just testify, we're right outside your door." And he's like, "Whoa, they're right outside my door.
I better go to Steubenville."
I better head. But again, as the Free Press staff noted, at least in discussions, is in Steubenville, they were met by people described by one Free Press staffer as looking like they were extras in the movie Deliverance. It's like ordinary people there, like,
they're just regular
do
people.
Not frack our state, Governor.
Yep. They were not your usual protesters. They were just people coming out, from around Ohio. Apparently, Ohioans look like people in Deliverance sometimes.
Well, you know, there's Appalachian counties.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons he went there. We have, I forget the official total. It keeps going up. It was 29. I think it's 31 or so now. But these Appalachian counties with high rates of poverty. But one thing they understand is that even if you're poor and your family's poor and your kids are poor, you don't want to light your drinking water. You don't want your drinking water to catch on fire.
Yeah, I mean, one of the disadvantages of fracking is that you may have fireballs coming out of your tap when you turn on your tap to get water out. So,
and interestingly enough, it's Attorney General Mike DeWine who's pretty much calling for the same things that the environmentalists and citizens in the area of the fracking are calling for: full transparency. Let us know what you're putting in our groundwater.
Yeah, and you know, it's a real shame Governor Kasich has called fracking a godsend for the economy. He's absolutely wrong. It's a public health threat. And, you know, what is going to happen to our state once this natural resource is extracted? We have tons of horrible chemicals in our drinking water, and people are dying of cancer and mystery diseases that are caused by the chemicals. It's going to be a hell of a lot more expensive to buy our bottled water from Nestle and Coke, and it's not going to help the economy at all in the long run when we have to buy our water from out of state.
Well, you know, I'd hate to have Kasich blame this on God or any deity that's supposed to be benevolent.
Huh?
I'm thinking it may have more to do with evil forces.
Yes.
Beelzebub,
absolutely.
The devil, Satan, Lucifer. Really, I mean, who puts carcinogenics
into our natural good drinking water?
Into
that we have
aquifers and water,
I mean,
tables?
We're actually really lucky in Ohio to have all the drinking water that we do. We're very blessed. And we really shouldn't mess up those natural resources that will sustain us. People lived off the land in Ohio long before there was much of any economy at all.
And that was called sustainability. And we want to relocalize. In fact, a big advocate of relocalization and sustainability was in town last Saturday, and we're speaking here on Friday, February 10th. Last Saturday, Jill Stein was nominated for president at the Ohio Biannual Green Convention. And, of course, this is the first, we're kind of the Iowa of the what Iowa is to the Republican Party, we are to the Greens. You know, Iowa's first in the nation caucus, and all these far right wingers come out. All the progressives that are green come out, and we're the first to nominate. And every person that's ever been nominated out of Ohio has gone on to win the Green Party endorsement for president. What'd you think of Jill?
So, yeah, we had Jill Stein come and talk to the Ohio Green Party, and that was pretty awesome. She is a doctor in Massachusetts, and I liked her platform of the Green New Deal, where she talked about, building a green economy, legalizing marijuana for, I believe, for recreational use in addition to medical cannabis. Really bringing the troops home. I forget exactly what else was on her platform, but it was all good.
All right. So Jill Stein, nominated by the Ohio Green Party. The final nomination will come in July at the Green Party National Convention. And delegates were chosen, and Connie Goodell Newton was one of those delegates chosen to go to the Green Party National Convention and nominate the Green Party candidate for president.
Yep, that's right. In June, I will be headed to
Baltimore.
Yes, I've been there before. It's an interesting city. It'll be fun to return.
And let's do a follow-up on another article. Trader Joe's signed a fair food agreement. We've talked about the Immokalee workers on this program before. You recall that they're virtual slave labor down there in Florida, and they were asking for a minimal amount of money. I believe it was like a penny a pound. See, I was giving them 25. See, I'd have given them a quarter a pound. A penny a pound more.
Right.
In their picking of tomatoes.
Yeah, so think about it. Where do you get your tomatoes? Do you get them from Florida? Chances are they may be grown
particularly
by
in the winter.
Slave labor, folks. Can you believe it? I thought we were supposed to have banned slavery, like 100 years ago. So,
and we mean literally slavery in some senses. Immigrants who have come in from Haiti, undocumented, who
are forced
not
to work.
Being paid. Yeah, forced to work, or they're going to be turned in by people that are hiring them.
Right. So it's not legal, but it's not really regulated. It's not adequately regulated, and slavery does exist in this country, and that's something that people need to know every time they go to the grocery store. So now I guess you can go to Trader Joe's, and they have signed the Fair Food Agreement. So the Immokalee workers
Joe's and buy
got
some
what they were
wine and
asking
food.
For. Yeah, and you know that's great because Trader Joe's does have the reputation among consumers as being, you know, more ethical, and I think they do strive for that. And so they've taken the step, and they're actually living up to that appearance that they're trying to create with their marketing.
So if you were boycotting Trader Joe's because of the way they were treating the Immokalee workers, make sure you go back there now and buy stuff from them and thank them for signing a fair food agreement.
Or if you still don't want to buy from them, I've heard they have wonderful dumpsters.
And all you freegans out there, it's okay to return to the Trader Joe's dumpsters.
Once again. So, in election law, an update.
Yes, in the new issue of, it's already been on the Free Press site, but just to remind our listeners, three important things happened in December, beginning in a day that will live in infamy, December 7th. The NAACP went to the United Nations and complained about, what'd they complain about? I wrote the article. They complained about the undemocratic nature of these new laws in the U.S., 25 new laws in 14 states brought to us by ALEC, off-the-shelf right-wing laws that will keep people from voting, making it really difficult, stringent ID requirements. So instead of making it easy for people to vote, it makes it hard.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. They went to the U.N. to complain about this, which I think is a great idea. It's a good step. But it's kind of unbelievable after, you know, as far as we think we've come, as, coming away from Jim Crow laws and black laws to keep minorities down, that we still have to do this. We still have to go to a body like the UN to enforce our voting rights.
And we have a long history here in the United States. We don't become a full minimal democracy, and that's still questionable, till the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which is one of the parts that created federal registrars to register people to vote in the former Southern Jim Crow states. And those federal registrars were allowed to carry a firearm. That's how dangerous it was in 1965 to register people to vote. And, of course, here's the quiz. What year did we allow blacks to vote in Ohio? We won't quiz Connie on it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm reading an interesting book right now that's called The Black Laws. About
sure. And we had black laws in Ohio.
Yeah, we had it in Ohio. And it just, it's, you know, it's interesting to see the history of racial prejudice and how legally, from the founding of the state of Ohio, you know, the founders tried to dehumanize and strip citizenship rights from African Americans from the very beginning. And, you know, I work in the courts now, and I just see kind of the disparate treatment that a lot of people coming into the courts get. And I want, you know, I can see that that's drawn back from that history. But that doesn't answer your question, Bob.
No, but
what year was it?
It's Black History Month. That's
yeah.
what I know. I looked it up.
Yeah.
1870. So we honor that our state was founded in 1803.
Right.
And 67 years later, 5 years after the end of the Civil War, blacks could vote in Ohio. So we fought the Civil War against the South when blacks couldn't vote in Ohio. And, of course, the other thing, we in Columbus, we desegregated our racist school system in 1881. So,
well, that's news
times.
To me because, you know, Columbus public schools are still segregated.
Yeah. Well, that's what, of course, you know, as an attorney, that's what we call de facto segregation by housing. You know, there's segregation in fact, in reality.
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, nature of social economics and the way our society has racist practice in regards to hiring, firing. But
well, and school funding.
School funding as well, but in 1888, we had two colored schools. If you were a black child, it didn't matter where you lived, or even if your parents were rich and lived in Muirfield, whatever that was
in
back
New Albany.
Then, the equivalent, is you couldn't go. You had to go to the, quote, colored school till 1881. And it's really not till around 1948 that the downtown theaters were integrated because a fine theater in the day, blacks could sit in the balcony, but only whites could sit on the main floor. And that was done by CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, which actually did its test market for civil disobedience in Columbus, Ohio.
Cool.
Before they headed south on freedom rides and were firebombed, beaten in 1960 and 61.
So back on the topic of voting, voting machines. The Election Assistance Commission has found that voting machines are programmed to be partisan.
Yeah, the United States Election Assistance Commission, a federal agency that certifies the voting machines, found that 10% of the votes in Cuyahoga County, Cleveland, city of Cleveland, that tends to vote 90% or so Democratic, is that 10% of the votes were being recorded wrong. That would mean you were getting votes in Cleveland for Republicans when they should have went to Democrats. So it's the first time a federal agency has documented, a federal agency of the U.S. government, that the voting machines record wrong. We on the Free Press have been telling you this since 2004. But now we have actual proof, just like we did on the state level when we found out, when we went up to Miami County and found votes added by a computer.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
So we need to keep that in mind, our election machines. And, of course, whenever a federal agency finds something like this, in this case, they want to minimize the reality or the horror that software and hardware provided by private proprietary vendors, non-transparent software and hardware, which is essentially computer voting. It's computer technology. Apparently, computers can be programmed. Who would have thought? I mean, next thing you know, you're going to tell me there's an occupation called computer programmers. Yes, indeed. When you vote on computerized machines, computerized voting machines, he who controls the software and the hardware controls the vote.
No big surprise. Makes sense. This one? Okay. And South Carolina's new voter ID law. Discriminatory? The U.S. Justice Department thought so.
Well, you know, you got a big lot of problems with the ID laws because a lot of these ID laws, it's not like, hey, let's have ID and make it easy for everyone to vote.
Right.
Usually what they do is they only want a few IDs, right? It's like state driver's license and state ID. And then what they do is, say you're going to college. Up to 40% of students, depending on what state they're in, don't have an ID. They don't have cars. They often live on campus. They don't have a driver's license. Two of the years I was at college, I didn't have a driver's license. You know, 1 year I lived in the dorm. The other year I lived on campus. It wasn't until I moved off my third year that I really needed a driver's license. But in that situation, they'll say, well, you don't have a driver's license. You can't vote. Or you don't have a state ID. And then they want you to pay for the state ID, which is like a poll tax, which is unconstitutional.
Right.
On the other hand, you have a college ID. It can have your picture on it. It can have your address on it. It can be from North Carolina State University, South Carolina, the Ohio State, but they won't accept it, even though it's a state university, even though it has your address and your pictures. And not only that, usually these laws forbid the county boards of elections, who keep the list of the registered voters, from going out and getting a picture. And the odd thing is, if you go to conferences in the U.S., and I do regularly, I present at conferences, I talk, a lot of the conferences I go to, they actually take your picture. There's this amazing thing apparently called digital cameras.
Yeah.
And I guess they even have some on phones. And they can take your picture and issue you an ID on the spot, verifying who you are. But they won't do it for voting because they want to shrink the electorate. They want to make it difficult for people to vote. Who else doesn't have a lot of IDs or are underserved by
poor people?
IDs? Poor people,
homeless
sure.
people?
Homeless people. Elderly people,
yeah.
particularly those in assisted living that don't drive anymore, black people, Hispanic people.
Let me tell you something. Even if you're homeless, you still have the right to vote. You don't have to have an address in order to vote. And in the past, before the voter ID laws, you could take a piece of mail with your address to your voting location, and it has your name. It's a utility bill or some letter. You know, it's your proof of residence. It could be a homeless shelter. And, you know, you're registered to vote at a certain place. The Board of Elections checks and makes sure that, you know, there aren't duplicates. But that was sufficient in order to secure your right to vote. Now, with the voter IDs, you may have to pay money. An indigent person who's homeless may not have their act together well enough to, you know, get their ID taken. They may not have $12 for the, you know, the minimum state ID, but they still have the right to vote. And we don't get to decide for them. You can't vote because you're not literate. You can't vote because you can't afford to pay a poll tax. That stuff is all illegal. So basically, everybody, by virtue of being a citizen, has the right to vote, and we should not abridge that right to vote by requiring voter ID.
And the Supreme Court has ruled that if you have. You need an address, but an address doesn't need to be a fixed address, an official address. If it's like you live under the bridge on a red couch,
yep.
you can put under the Broad Street Bridge on Red Couch. If they can find you, that is your address for your voting rights.
Right. And, you know, really, just by virtue of being a citizen, we have the right to vote. It cannot be abridged because you don't have a proper address. They've been very liberal about defining your address. So the voter ID law really just is pretty much totally illegitimate.
And the government knows who these people are. I mean, these people in nursing homes, virtually all of them get Social Security from the government.
Yeah.
The government knows whether they're a citizen. The government knows their employment history. The government knows where they live. So to think that why aren't they coordinating all these databases to get people to vote? What the Republicans like to do is say, here's all these databases. Unless they all match perfectly, you can't vote.
We're going to strike them all from the records.
Let's use these government records
to
allow American citizens to vote.
That people have the right to vote.
Sure.
I mean, they should really be enabling people to vote.
That is so Western European, Connie. It is so European Union.
Yeah.
Voting's a constitutional right.
Like socialism.
What next?
They're going to try to give everybody health care. They're going to try to force everybody to have health care.
And take away my right to die a brutal death without health care. Get off my back, Obama.
Yeah, right to die.
My right to die a miserable death and not have access to health care.
It should be a choice.
It should.
Okay, so occupy the courts?
Well, we're for that. You occupy the courts quite regularly.
Well, yeah, but not in the same way as the activist group Occupy the Courts gathered on January 20th.
They went down there, and really they were talking about what we've talked about before.
Citizens United.
Citizens United, yep. And corporate personhood.
Great. So were you there? How was it?
I was there, and it really was like racupying the courts,
yeah.
Which actually is tonight. This Friday. You probably won't be able to hear this in time, but we're racupying at Kobo. That's why you need to get a copy of the Free Press Express and visit freepress.org, because we got events going on and you can know where to go to racupy. People went there and said, look, we're tired of pretending like legal fiction, that is a corporation, a legal fiction created is a real flesh and blood human being. They're not. Corporations are not people. I don't care what Mitt Romney says.
Wait, what?
I don't care what Mitt Romney says. Corporations are not people. And money does not equal free speech. It's like, it's that absurd notion that deals with the poor, right? The old saying is that only in America do we proclaim that the poor and the rich are equally free to sleep under the bridge.
Yeah.
You know, here you've got this, you know? It's like when, you know, you can't discriminate. I mean, and I see some of these comments. I go to these websites, and they're like, you know, it's discrimination if someone's got, like, you know, $100 billion, and they're like General Electric. They have a right to spend that secretly. It's like, no, they don't. They don't have a right. They're not in our Constitution. They don't have inalienable rights because you're stupid enough to believe, because you buy the corporate propaganda, because you buy their spin, and you think, you know, you're really heavy, that, you know, I'm defending the right of this legal fiction that doesn't really exist to propagandize secretly and corrupt American politics. By God, and it's free speech. Grow the hell up. Flesh and blood human beings have the right to free speech. Not Frankenstein monsters created by a bribed court in the pocket of the bourgeoisie. Okay.
All right. Well, before we run out of time, Bob, okay. I think we have one last topic. The Medical Cannabis Amendment of Ohio. So, there's a proposed amendment to the Ohio Constitution that will be on the ballot in the fall of 2012.
And it was very well written, I might add. And I think Fitriggis Cadell Newton law firm was involved in that writing.
And yes, Connie, we did. Yes, we did.
Connie did some of that drafting. That's why it flows very beautifully.
Yeah, we worked on the
little medical cannabis.
Worked on the summary. And Bob, did you meet with the Attorney General?
Well, we went there.
To get it certified?
Yeah, and then we went to the actual board, and the board kind of looked at it and said, no objections. Let it go forward.
Great. So the constitutional amendment, were some people trying to split it up into separate amendments that would be voted on separately?
Well, if they wanted to make it difficult for us, or if it was written poorly, they would have split it into more than one amendment.
So that they could strike part of it.
Right. I like to think it has thematic cohesion.
Yeah. One thing that that I contributed in the drafting of that was basically the medical cannabis amendment. It creates medical cannabis, so a doctor can kind of prescribe it, and people can become registered to become medical cannabis users, and they will not be penalized criminally for their possession of medical cannabis or paraphernalia involved in that. And so one of my contributions was a protection for low-income people to make sure that people would not have public benefits abridged because of their use of medical cannabis as long as they're properly registered. So, you
know, thrown out of public housing.
Yeah, so now people can get thrown out of public housing. They're even talking about doing drug testing for food stamps, which, I mean, my take on that is honestly, like, even if you do crack, you still got to eat. So I say, why not give crackheads, like, food stamps? I mean, they'll be healthier.
And not only that, they'll steal left. What do you think? If somebody's on crack and you take away their food stamps, what are their alternatives, right? They're human beings,
yeah,
and they have to eat.
Yeah, exactly. So people need to eat, even if they're on meth.
You got to eat. Rallies is right on this.
Yeah, and especially if they're smoking pot. Definitely got to eat, right?
So, you got to eat.
So I'm just saying, food stamps are a good thing. You know, I say, as far as welfare versus the paycheck thing, I say give people both.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
In fact, if people don't know,
why does it have to be an either or? I say give us paychecks, give us welfare, give us food stamps, give us socialized medicine. It's all good, right?
Up to my junior year in college, I got food stamps. College students, if they were below the poverty line, were eligible for food stamps up until Jimmy Carter was elected president in 1977, my senior
year.
Yeah,
now you have to take out a student loan.
Jimmy Carter cut me off and cut other college students up. Look, if you're below the poverty level and you're trying to get a college degree, you need food stamps in many cases.
Definitely.
More power to you.
Yeah, it'll help keep people from overextending themselves, taking out, like, student debt. And, you know, then you have to pay interest on it. So it's either food stamps, you could get food stamps, or, you know, you could take out a student loan and pay it off over, like, 30 years. What makes more sense?
Food stamps.
Yeah.
And the right to education. I think we should be paying students to go to school. It makes us a smarter, more effective society. But if not, their tuition should be free at public universities. I'm not talking about private universities, Harvard and Yale. I'm saying at community college, we can start there where I teach and go on to state colleges and university. Students should go for free. Well, how are you going to do that? How are you going to do that, Bob? I'll tell you how. We got a ton of troops in Afghanistan. Let's bring them home and put their money into education.
Stop spending the money on bombs for killing people.
Instead, we'll spend it on higher ed.
Yeah, make the world a better place. So, this is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
Readthefreepress.org and pick up a copy of the Free Press Express. And remember, the title says, Fractured State of the Union, John Kasich is the one causing the cultural wars. Peace.